7 in regards to Brandy Madison, DVM. Tracy, we don't have to get anyone on the phone for this one, right?
No.
Okay, great. All right, thank you for being here. All right, this is the time and place scheduled for the informal interview of Dr. Brandy Madison, DVM, in case number 2407. This matter will be heard by the board pursuant to the authority given to it at ARS 322234. Dr. Madison, please introduce yourself, and then your attorney can as well.
Hi, I'm Dr. Brandy Madison.
I'm Danny Cronister on Dr. Madison's behalf.
Dr. Madison, you have received a letter informing you of the matters to be discussed today and the possible actions the board may take at this informal interview. As a reminder, those options include dismissal, issuing you a non-disciplinary letter of concern, censuring you, placing your license on probation with terms that may include continuing education and practice restrictions. The board may also suspend your license for up to 30 days, assess a civil penalty, or refer this matter to a formal hearing. The purpose of this informal interview is to inquire into the facts and circumstances of this case. The board has read all the materials you have submitted. If you have any additional materials you would like to submit, please do so at this time. This proceeding is being digitally recorded. As a result, it is important that everyone speak loudly and clearly and that one person speaks at a time. We will begin by asking the lead board member assigned to this matter to give a brief summary of the case, and then you will be given an opportunity to respond. Following your response, the board may wish to ask you some questions. If present, the complainant will also be given an opportunity to address the board. If you have any questions for the board or anyone giving information during this interview, you may ask them through me. Dr. James, can you please give us a brief summary of the case?
Yes, except for that I'm on the wrong one. Sorry. I haven't changed over yet. All right, this is 2407. On March 30th, Rue, a 12-year, 11-month-old female chihuahua, underwent a left lateral and medial liver lobectomy. After surgery, the dog was transferred to Arizona Veterinary Emergency and Critical Care Center for hospitalization and treatment. The dog's care was overseen by multiple doctors from March 30th through April 3rd. On April 3rd, Dr. Granfone took over the dog's daytime care. She identified that the dog's glucagon was attached to the nasogastric tube and the enteral water was attached to the peripheral line. These lines were replaced. The dog seizured and was treated with diazepam and Unison before being placed in ICU. The pet owner was advised of the medical error of the glucagon and enteral water being placed in the incorrect ports sometime before 8 a.m. The dog continued to decline. CPR was initiated and the dog passed away. Complainant expressed concerns that the veterinarian that treated the dog provided inadequate care with respect to the amount of potassium chloride and pain medication administered to the dog and the crossing of the feeding tube and IV lines. Dr. Madison is the responsible veterinarian for the premise. She did not see or treat the dog.
Thank you. Dr. Madison, at this time I would like to swear you in. Do you swear or affirm that the evidence you're about to give will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
Yes.
Thank you. Dr. Madison, we would now like to give you an opportunity to respond to the summary and present whatever information you believe is relevant.
As was stated, I was not involved in the case and was actually out of the state at the time. I don't have anything else to add.
Quite all right. Okay, thank you. I would now like to ask board members if they have any questions of Dr. Madison.
I have a couple of questions for you. All right, since most of this for you is going to center around being the responsible veterinarian for the practice, I think you've probably already figured that part out, but that's why you're here. Can you describe for me, like, kind of how the practice trains their technicians in a short way, but like just to ensure that they have the skills necessary to do the jobs that they're assigned to?
That falls under the hospital director role, quite frankly, on the training committee. So giving you specifics on that, I couldn't probably give you a ton of specifics.
Do they have different levels within the practice?
Yes.
And so for the, because I believe we were able to whittle this down to one of two people.
Yes.
Do you know if those two people were both of the level of at the practice that they would have been handling this case?
Yes.
And as a responsible vet for the practice, do you realize or believe, I guess I should ask that first, that it's your responsibility to make sure staff are fully trained?
It would be, that's a good question. Overall, I would say yes. Generally those are done by protocol driven ways, and then people on site that are following through on those protocols and following through on that training, if that makes sense.
Okay. In looking back on this case, do you feel like there was anything differently the clinic could have done to prevent this?
I don't think in this case that there was, but I do think that it was taken very seriously as a blind spot that this could still happen, even though the protocol was in place. So, over the years, the protocols keep getting improved and improved upon as I think they probably do anywhere when you come up against areas that possible medical error can happen. And so had the protocol been followed, it wouldn't have happened. However, we always are looking to re-examine, okay, do we need to change this protocol then? How do we try to ensure that this is gonna not happen again? Because it's so devastating to the entire team for any of that to ever happen, as everybody here knows.
Yeah. My last question is around, obviously, we all know that an error happened. That's not in question. And we believe the staff at least had met the training that the hospital had put together. So different from human medicine, where you don't necessarily have certified people that you can hold accountable.
Yeah.
Who do you think ultimately is responsible for something like this happening?
I mean, it ends up being on us as the veterinarian, as the person there overseeing the case directly. As far as how things are set up, I think for us in the veterinary world.
And in a situation like this where you couldn't identify who it was, so you don't know what doctor necessarily was overseeing it at the time that it happened, whose accountability is it?
Yeah, I think that's challenging given that it was over a shift change, but at the same time, we're all accountable for knowing that we're gonna have to make a change here, figure out how we're going to work as a team to try to keep this from happening again.
Ms. Sullivan has a question.
Yes, you were referencing the protocols that weren't affected at the time. Did you develop those, or did the previous?
Yeah, we developed those as a team. Our critical care team, we developed them.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so it wasn't from some corporate office passed down. Okay, thank you.
Are there any other questions from board members? Okay, thank you. You may both step back. And then I would like to ask the Freemans to come forward.
As a flipper old.
I know.
Familiar
really.
Places, yeah.
Okay, if you'll both state your name for the record, and then I'm going to swear you in.
James Stewart Freeman.
Great.
Tina Freeman.
Great, thank you. Do you both swear or affirm that the evidence you are about to give is the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
I do.
Thank you. We obviously know you are the complainants in this case. We've read obviously the materials that you've provided, and I would now like to give you opportunity to address the board.
First of all, I do want to thank the board and everybody here for your time, and I know it's late, and I know you're over, and I do appreciate your earnest championing of people and dog owners and or pet owners in general. and their feelings and the pets. And so thank you, first of all. I kind of wrote down some notes. ABCCC and other facilities like that are professional facilities that are set up to give the utmost care to critically ill pets. And we entrust our pets to those facilities to get that care. And when that trust is violated by an error like that, it's a broken trust, and it's so bad for us that our remaining pet, we're taking her all the way to California to get her teeth cleaned because we're unsure of the quality of care. And that shouldn't have to be like that. And we shouldn't have to drag vets away from their practice. We shouldn't have to drag people in. But when policies in place are so lax that this type of error can be made, and there's no culpability for a variety of reasons. Initially, when we were told there was a window, they didn't know how long the tubes were switched. It was over an hour. We kept getting, it's over an hour. And there was an unlicensed vet tech that did it, what we got, the information we got. Then at later hearing, the last hearing last month that we went through, they said, well, there's video. Well, that video has to be timestamped, first of all. And that video, I believe, should be made available to the board to make their own assessment of who's culpable and who. I don't want to punish any vets, but I want to know that there's action that can be corrective action or a verdict given out to cause change. When a policy, when protocol fails, there has to be change, and it can't just be the onus. There has to be pressure from outside sources, or they won't change, or they'll change it improperly. That vague timeline of over an hour is now 2 hours, roughly, because of the timestamp. From the last meeting, we construed that there's about a 2 hour window that those tubes were switched. They didn't want to assign blame because they couldn't discern which vet tech. There were two vet techs by the statement from the last thing that were out there at the time that they assumed that the tubes were crossed. That's a double violation to me because you have one vet tech that changes the tubes incorrectly. You have another vet tech that is witnessing it and either is not educated enough to know that the mistake is made or they see the mistake is made and don't warrant reporting it or correcting it.
Or
they were having a conversation and distracting them, causing the error to be made. My whole impetus here is to make changes in protocol that are verifiable, tangible changes that I can see, that public can see, that we are protecting your animal. I made the statement at the last hearing that I believe, I'm a video professional. I just got back from 4 a.m. with the Angels all day. I plug in hard drives all the time, and I cannot plug that hard drive in properly. I can't, because the connections only go one way. If they had some collar on those two tubes, if they had a collar that had a square and a triangle, and you could not cross those freaking tubes, and it just burns me up that you have two vet techs, two, watching this, doing this, and neither one of them catches up. Then, on top of that, you have a 2 hour window where vet techs, multiple, not just those two, four vet techs that they're telling, plus multiple veterinarians from different shifts, are walking by Rue, walking right by her, not checking, not cross checking, not checking up on their unlicensed vet techs. So, the only reason they discovered that the tubes were crossed was they were dislodged when Rue, by this is a direct quote from Dr. Granfoni, those tubes were dislodged by an event, she called it an event, a neurological event. And when she went to replace them, oh, darn it, those tubes have been crossed. And we don't know when, and we don't know how, and we don't know who. So there's no culpability. And I would just put forward, with all due respect to the people here, because I really appreciate But I understand the limits of your jurisdiction. I understand the limits of your capacity to enforce change. I understand completely that you can't enforce a facility to make change. You can't do that. You can only look at veterinarian's license and did they do the right thing? And I understand that those are the limits. But again, with all due respect, that makes, in a large respect, the ability to enact change impotent, because you can't make change because your hands are tied. And I know it's frustrating to you. It's frustrating to me because I can't fathom this type of thing going on. And we have not asked for money. We have not asked for anything but verifiable, tangible change, that procedures are changed, training is changed, equipment is changed to protect animals. I'm sorry to get really passionate about this.
I'm tired.
And I'm tired. I've been up since four or three, I'm sorry. And we also know that, sorry, notes, and I apologize, I'm trying to make this fast for you. That Dr. Toomey has since relocated to New York, which is very suspicious to me why he would leave. The timing is very suspicious to me. But
we think he's the best.
Well, okay, we think so. But and again, to my statement, it's not that we can't ascertain which vet tech and who is their supervisor. They both are culpable. They both, one made the error and the other witnessed it. And that's just, it's a very pervasive thing, and it's staffing and it's tiredness. I know what tiredness can do to you because I'm battling.
Well, and then they're unlicensed, so shouldn't some responsibility go on to the vet? Because you guys said, they didn't even get a letter of concern.
And this was a grossly negligent act that was witnessed by two vet techs. And we're looking for change, and we're looking for action, and we're looking for something. Because this is just this is just my first phase. I'm going through the proper procedures, but I'm a media professional, and I know and I would also request the transcripts from both proceedings, because I want to make the public aware.
We
want to change it to protect it. That's the first thing, is to make change. But if changes can't be made, if your hands are tied, if our hands are tied, if we can't do anything to protect our animals, I want to make public aware and be informed. I won't be slanderous. I won't be persecutive. I will just make all the information available and let the people understand that this is the circumstance, this is the area, this is the time we live in, and this is what we're faced with. And I appreciate the time. Well,
thank you. And now I think if anybody has any questions for them.
I have one, just sure, because it kind of comes to the last time that we were here. Did you ever get a copy of the updated protocol that was put into place following
I've never gotten anything. I had one call from the facility administrator, who I think was here before, was Tanya. I had one phone call, and I requested, this is before all of this, before filing. I said, I would like to know what you did, what changes were made, what have you put in place? And she said, well, changes have been made. And I said, but I can't tell you. I legally can't tell you. I'm like, that's not good enough for me.
We said, who did it? We don't want a name, but was it
licensed or unlicensed? So we can't tell you that. And it's just, yeah. it's maddening to me.
So no communication with them.
Since the last hearing, no.
Well, again, thank you both for being here. You can both step back now.
All right, I'm sorry for being long-winded.
That's okay. Dr. Madison and your counsel, if you would like to come forward, I'd now like to give you the final opportunity to share any additional remarks or any questions you would like to ask.
I think that all the things that were said are very understandable. It's very it's very hard for any of us to put our pet into somebody else's care and then have that trust. And so, yes, there have been significant changes made to the protocol, even some discovery of some new equipment so that things cannot connect to each other. They have to have their specific connectors so that these cannot physically be inadvertently connected to one another. We've also made protocol changes on who can reconnect. We've got the highest level technical staff or doctor to be the individuals to connect it back together, just to ensure that, again, we've gone as far as we can to try to ensure that this doesn't happen again.
Ms. Sullivan, you have a question?
Yes, and you submitted all that to the board?
Yeah, that's in the packet.
On January 12th, and I'm happy to provide this copy to the Freeman's
right
now.
Yeah.
Okay, now as far as that copy that we were provided it last time.
Yeah.
Could you tell us the date that it was put into place? It was many, many months after the event, correct?
And I wondered the same thing when I couldn't remember, and it's not on here, so I apologize.
It was on the copy that we have.
On one standard operating procedure, it looks like it was original date of issue 12/7/2020. And the event happened.
Yeah. So the original one, we went back to the original protocol and said, hey, this is what was not followed. We've got to get to this protocol has to be followed directly. Since then, we found out that there actually are some connectors that we could access that cannot be connected because it had happened elsewhere too. That in other states, that some other facilities had. I'm sure like Mylar or whatever companies had heard issues as well, because it's also been a thing that's happened in human medicine and certainly been reported in human medicine as well. So since we found out we could access these connectors, we've changed the protocol again to these connectors.
Okay, thank you.
And that new protocol, that changed protocol was submitted?
That's okay.
I saw the different lines of connectors.
Yeah. Thank you. Any further questions? Okay. Thank you both. You can step back. Okay. This concludes the portion of the informal interview in which the board hears testimony. The board will now deliberate and decide what to do in this matter.
Thank you.
So we're Dr. James.
Yeah. So we're discussing 2407, and we had a similar case this morning where we're talking about the responsible vet, and I think this is a really tough one because ultimately somebody has to have accountability for the fact that this happened. And the responsible vet in this hospital wasn't even there, didn't know anything about it, all these things. But ultimately, that is who is responsible for making sure protocols are followed and making sure practices are in place.
No, and I agree. I just have a question because this was originally my four cases. I unfortunately wasn't here in January because I actually.
So that's how I got it? Thank you.
Yeah, pretty much. I had idiopathic geriatric vestibular syndrome, so I know what old dogs feel like when they're like that now. So I was in the emergency room myself for that day. But I'm wondering how we got to the premise license holder and not the doctor who was actually in charge of the case at that time.
We didn't know who it was.
Yeah.
Dr. Toomey.
It was
rounded to Dr. Graffone at 8 o'clock that morning, or 7 or 8 o'clock that morning, when it was found.
The
so it was Dr. Toomey that had it.
From them was they couldn't tell which of the two technicians it was, and they couldn't tell exactly what
happened. I can tell which doctor it was right here.
I think we all thought that, but that is not what came out in the testimony, if I'm recalling this correctly.
Well, the medical records show that.
And so there was question as to how you could hold them responsible because the clinic themselves couldn't even tell us who it was.
It's in the flowchart.
But they could not commit to that. And so
it says right here, Dr. Toomey is responsible for Rue's care from approximately 7 p.m. to around 7 a.m. when Dr. Graffone took over. Dr. Graffone is the one that found the issue.
Right, but when?
8 o'clock.
And yeah. But when did it happen?
Well,
did
the dog, we know that the tubes were unhooked for an ultrasound around 6 a.m.
And then they were rehooked back up.
Yeah.
Okay.
So that's about the only time you can have an issue. I think we have to go with like Rabban to Yevon's. I don't think they magically got switched.
Did it get hooked back up? I mean, did Dr. Toomey ever see this case again after it got hooked back up? And Dr. Garofalo noticed it at 8. Like, we went through this, though. I don't think we can rehash it because we went through this in a lot of detail. And maybe going back and listening to it would help provide some clarity, because I can't recall. My short-term memory is really bad anymore.
But it's right here in black and white.
Yeah, but you weren't here. There was a lot of discussion going back and forth on, who ultimately was responsible. So,
that is how we got to the responsible veterinarian. And really, I mean, I think too, some of it was, even if it fell under the care of Dr. Toomey at the time that he was there, or he or she, I don't even remember, that's not the person responsible for saying, what are the staffing levels in the hospital? Who's allowed to do this? What are the training? They can say, I don't feel comfortable with you working on my case.
It's my responsibility to check everything.
But I don't necessarily know, and it definitely didn't sound like there was a process that the doctor comes back behind and checks everything the technician does. So,
if we did, we wouldn't be in this issue.
Right, but that's not protocol there or anywhere that works for a doctor to go back and do that. That's then why even have technicians? We're going down a rabbit hole, and it's 5:40.
I just don't know how we got to an actual premise license holder.
This is an issue that comes up time and time again. When we have a CVT, we have a way to go. When we don't have a CVT, then we have to look at the veterinarian who's there at the time. Is it their responsibility, or is it the responsibility of the responsible veterinarian? And this comes up time and time again. I wish that responsible veterinarians, when they sign on to be one, would be aware of some of these things.
But we wouldn't have it. I mean, that's my other concern, right?
Yeah,
like, at some point in time, we're going to find that nobody wants to be a responsible veterinarian. Yeah. And with,
if they're
going to
be blamed
80%
for everything,
of practices being corporate,
it's going to be
owned.
Their fault for everything. Yeah.
So,
CBT.
Fundamentally, this process is really broken. And I sympathize with the owners, because as frustrated as they are that we can't impart change, we can't. Like, there's broken things that make it to where we can't hold the person accountable that did it. We don't have licensed people that we can do that to. And so,
well, this is not a criminal court. This is preponderance of evidence. And the evidence shows, by preponderance, that this was done most likely at 6 o'clock and screwed up.
Even if it was done at 6 o'clock, I'm not 100% sure that is the person who's responsible for going and checking
it. You don't have to be 100% sure. This is not criminal proceeding.
Okay, but we're not going backwards.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you can abstain if you would like, because you weren't here for the last one, so that might be an option.
No, I'm part of a discussion.
But, I just clicked off. I think here we have heard from the practice that there has been a ton of change that has been implemented. I think it's unfortunate that no one in the practice thought that maybe they should get back with this owner prior to us getting here at this point and him being handed policy change, right? Like, I think this could have been handled a lot better. And I don't think action was taken as quickly as it should have been. I think there was a time delay that really gives me some unrest on how serious did we take this, and would we have taken it as serious if it hadn't gotten to this point. So I applaud the efforts of the owners to keep pushing this, because I think it is what caused change to happen. At the end of the day, I think the responsible veterinarian has to take ownership in the training and the qualifications of the staff that work in there, and making sure the staff has the qualifications to do whatever it is that what their level is allowed to do in that practice. But I also feel like this could have fallen on a lot of different people, and I understand it. So I think at this point, I would dismiss the case and issue a letter of concern regarding the training and the oversight of technicians in the practice, and depending on the hospital director to do it, who's also not licensed, isn't going to be an option. So they have to have a more active role in the training of the staff and approving staff to be at the level that they're at. And to me, that falls to the responsible vet, not to the doctors that were handling the case. So.
I'll second the motion.
Okay. So we have a motion and a second to dismiss this case and issue a letter of concern. I know this has been a tough one. It's like, I guess I have to ask, is there any further discussion before we vote?
Yes, I'm very concerned. This should never have happened, period. The end, amen. And I do think we need to hold someone accountable. And based on the information we've been given, based on staff training issues and protocols not being clear, it falls to the responsible veterinarian. So I'm going to dissent from your motion to dismiss.
Okay. Any further discussion? All right, well, let's try and do a vote.
Roll call. We have a second, right? You seconded, Melissa?
Second. Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Ms. Krieger?
I'll vote nay.
Ms. Frost?
Nay.
Dr. James is an aye. Dr. Mosley?
Aye.
Ms. Solomon?
Nay.
Dr. Wright?
Nay.
Okay, so motion fails. So do you have a secondary motion?
This is a really difficult thing because I think we're scapegoating the premise holder. And I'm not cool with that either. So
but,
I think we're scapegoating the premise holder, saying we can't hold a veterinarian responsible, so let's go after this premise holder. That doesn't sit right with me. I have the flowcharts.
Well, hey, they didn't. None of them came right. forward and said, right. "Hey, you know what?
No one's going to."
I think
that's
it was
our
me.
Job to
so
it out. It's our job to figure it out. So now I'm not comfortable going after the premise holder. I think this is a bad situation there.
Make a motion to dismiss.
Then this whole thing just goes away.
What you're saying. That's the whole point.
With nobody having any kind of responsibility.
You already missed the last meeting.
Yeah.
I know
yeah.
that sucks for you, and I know you're mad about it, but
yeah,
we cannot go back and rehash what happened.
You can reopen a case.
No, we already did that case.
Yeah.
We already reviewed that case. We cannot reopen that case and try it twice.
Can
no,
you
we
reopen
can't.
The case?
If you'd like to go into executive session for legal advice, I'd be happy to.
I make a motion to go to executive session for legal advice.
Second.
Killing me here. All right.
I don't know about anybody else, but I have to leave here in about 10 minutes.
Well, I understand the building closes at 6 o'clock.
Yeah.
Is that correct, Victoria?
It does not close. It does not close.
Do we want to pend?
I'm sorry?
Do we want to pend everything else on the agenda?
I don't think we can.
Yeah. Okay, well, you go on without you.
I gotta go.
Okay, so if we're doing executive session, what is easiest right now? Should we just all pop into there?
No.
Okay, I'm like, she's got all, okay.
Step out.
Just step out.
Yes, thank you.
So we're going to take the belongings and step outside for us, please.
Sorry, guys.
Thank you.
I agree about Dr.